Blog Talk Radio.
You think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Thinking. Chris, shrinking, nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking, honorary degrees from Lincoln, I cross borders like those Sheikins and do albums in a weekend, I'm hip-hop speaking, never the weakling, I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all speaking, them lies and them liars, I still make flyers, I still ride bands and say MC for hire, I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place, mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face, then you got them rappers with that cold broke face, they tour around the world, then they going no place, my KRS one moves at its own pace. On vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they're sexual, but they wanna remain respectable. Stop frying.
Do you think
they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Thinking me, I say impeccable, running circles around these intellectuals, what a spectacle, they get mad when I say I and God are identical, you better get on your knees and praise them, these conspiracy theory rappers, I'll blaze them too, ooh, deja vu, you seen this all before me, slaying your crew, I'm known by all the kids, I studied Dr. King, man, and all he did, people don't stop calling Chris for gigs, cause when I'm on the mic, man, I flip they lid, me, and bullshit, I can't even count all the dough this month I did. From coast to coast, we roasting toast. I'm hot, me and the ice can't get close.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Revolutionaries know the game. We take away the pain like Novocaine. Knowledge reigning supreme, you know the name. This the name that don't play all them games. I ain't gonna call no names or take away no fame. But the airwaves is a shame. And the public don't know who to blame. So they blame rappers like we are insane. Like we are to blame for society's pain. Like they don't know for sure what's in our brains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Same style oppression, socially rearranged. Many of our problems we already overcame, but we stuck in the past, can't see the change. Stuck in the Hyundai, can't see the range. Stuck in the towers, can't see the planes.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic at all. This. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see by the dawn? So proudly we hailed at the twilight land gleaming. Blue broad stripes and bright stars through the fairyland.
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4. I got something, yo, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring. Ring with the harmony, oh, liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high. Burning the time, loud as the Lord's sea.
Out there, I know I lost a lot of fans and listeners because of the inconsistency of my show. I'm down to 13 weeks, everybody. 13 weeks of early voting kicks in. I'm out here campaigning. It looks good, but he's a champ. No. I got miracles, the Most High, everybody on my side. So, what I'm going to start doing in this 12 weeks is just give you, my listeners, a taste of Chicago, Cook County, Illinois politics. So what I'm going to do is take you on a history trip. Now, bar any technical difficulties, play some excerpts from the 1992 election, from how the media saw it. We got guys like Terry Peterson, the great Miss Izola, Conrad World, Gus Savage, Mel Reynolds, Bobby Rush, Charles Hayes, Lou Palmer, Vernon Jarrett, Philip Jackson. So where were you, Black Chicago, in 92? And he picked it up at 111. when Terry Peterson come in. We ain't got to deal with O'Connor. All right, everybody, enjoy. Hope that comes out all right. I'm doing this from a remote location. I'm out campaigning. Can you hear me, Ebony? I'm using my iPhone and video chat with Ebony. You got it? Hit it.
I don't hear nothing.
Something nice. Write this down for me.
Write that down for us, Rose. We're going outside.
Tough year this year?
Not really. You know, we're hoping, we're looking for a good turnout, especially here in the 17th Ward. You know, we're looking to get the people out and got a lot of issues to get out on.
What's the foundation of politics in Chicago?
You know, Chicago has a long history of politics. You go all the way back. I'm not that very old. I'm a baby boomer, 33 years old. And I guess the earliest recollection I have of it would go back to Mayor Daley's father. And like you said, you just look at the political history of Chicago. I think Chicago pretty much sets the trend for the rest of the United States. If you look at the election of Mayor Washington, when that took place, I think you saw an increase of voters registration as well as participation by African Americans all over the United States. And we feel that with the way the economy is and other things affecting not only African Americans, but other people that, you know, we're all going to be motivated to get out this time. And we're looking for an excellent turnout here in the 17th Ward under the leadership of Alderman Allen Street.
When I have, you know, Congressman, what is significant? How is the Savage Reynolds thing? How has that built up over the years? There's a history to that, is it not?
Well, the history as far as Mayor Reynolds, this is his third time running against Congressman Savage. I guess that would be probably the only significance as far as that. You know, he's been the candidate to run against Congressman Savage for the last 3 years. That's probably be the only significance that I would see.
Who does your alderman support?
Well, Alderman Streeter supports Congressman Savage.
Why?
Well, he's known Congressman Savage. Congressman Savage has always fought. For the rights of not only African-American people, but for all people. And he's a voice in Washington, D.C. for our race and for his district. And I think he's proven that and shown that over the time that he's been in Congress.
What is... politics in Chicago and Illinois politics. What is the stand with regard to black politics in America? Is it important? Is it not important?
Well, I think it's very important. I think that one of the things that, as I mentioned earlier, if you look back in with the election of Mayor Harold Washington, at that time, you had one of the biggest voter turnout for the African-American community in the history of Chicago politics. You look now at the election of Mayor Harrington in Memphis, Tennessee. You look at a lot of other African-American leadership that has developed since the Mayor Washington's election, and I think you can see the significance of why Chicago politics is so important. It is very important. I believe, personally,
lost it, Ebony. What?
That Chicago sets the trend for the rest of the United States when it comes to politics. And I think that everyone else, you know, takes the lead here.
This is Terry Peterson talking about Chicago. An interview, if I'm not mistaken, he was Bobby Rush's point man at this time.
From Chicago. And so that's why I said I'm looking for a big turnout, congressional races. We've got an opportunity here in Chicago.
Now this time, Mayor Williams come out to Gus Savage and Bobby Williams.
I go to elect the first African-American woman to the United States Senate, Carol Moseley Braun.
Of course, Carol Moseley Braun was running, but Charlie Hayes and Bobby Rush running also. Two old school heavyweights, and two up-and-coming young guys. I'm seeing we having a delay.
We've got a chance to put an African-American woman on the Supreme Court, Justice Blatch Manning, as we...
That never took place, so... As the district shows it, we're having a delay. What I'm going to do is, while we're transferring the speed, be it video to audio...
Here at the last election with Justice Charles Freeman, who's now sits on the Supreme Court for the state of Illinois. So that's what I'm talking about when I say Chicago sets the trend for politics, not only here in Chicago, but I believe all over the United States.
Now, this is the best true statement even nowadays. Barack Obama been in Chicago, Carol Moseley Braun, Harold Washington, Jackson.
And is it race-based politics? I mean, you're talking about, do the white people vote for black politicians here? Only black people vote for black politicians? What's the deal? What's the reason?
No, I think our people are a lot more.
I'm so sorry, people. I gotta find a better way to download it. Again, I'm not in the studio driving. Emmy's in the studio. I'm going back and forth with her. She said it's a cable problem. Now, I have to show prepared.
More sophisticated than just voting. You know, a lot of times by race. Now, we've noticed during Mayor Washington's election, there were some people who crossed over and voted along racial lines. But we have to understand, in my opinion, like I said, I've only been in this.
Well, what I'm hearing is it's a delay. There's so many feeds over the net. That's taking that long time. So until we get that faded out.
For a short period of time, I think that we all have to learn to work together, and I think that we have to support our own leadership. I think it's wrong for us to support that leadership that people come into our community and select as that leadership that we should support. I think that we have to support those.
We're going to upload this on my page, Facebook page, and I'm going to put it out there on content.
Those that have been out in the forefront, that have always fought the fight, for our people, and stick with them. I don't think, and then, like I said, maybe I'm being a little vague when I say that Chicago might not vote along racial lines to an extent. Yes, it does.
Yes, we do. And then, yes, we don't. You know, blacks, next white all the time. We had a black man run for governor. Blacks can get behind him. We had a black woman run for senator. After Obama left, blacks can get behind him. Hell. We have Roland Burris, a qualified man. Blacks can get behind him. We got behind Durbin. You know?
Chicago at one time was considered one of the most racist cities, you know, in the United States. So it would be naive for you or for me, you know, to think that, you know, race doesn't play a factor as far as voting in Chicago.
Excellent. Your name is?
My name is Terry Peterson.
And you're chief of staff for?
I am chief of staff for Alderman Alan Streeter.
Very good.
Two congressional races going on. We have a former Black Panther leader, Bobby Rush, running against a gentleman, Congressman Charles.
That's Charles Hayes. What it is.
Hayes, who's been out in the forefront, who was selected, handpicked by Mayor Washington. On the other hand, you have on the other side, which is the second congressional district, you have Congressman Gus Savage, who's been out in the forefront fighting for African Americans, being challenged again for the third time by Mr. Mel Reynolds. And also, I think there's some significance.
I'm challenging Bobby Rush.
The fact that you have an African-American woman, Carol Mosley Bryan, who has always been accountable to those that have elected her. She was the recorder of deeds. Now she has a chance to become the first African-American woman in the United States Senate. So I think there's a lot of significance with what's taking place here in Chicago.
Bobby Rush beat the Harold Washington hand-picked individual. I do don't know that. I do forgot that. You know something happening?
Good. No.
Okay, you're in the ward of Alderman. So just being here in this ward and getting a perspective of Chicago politics, this ward in itself has a history because Alderman Alan Streeter has been fighting the machine. He's an independent Democrat, and he's been fighting the machine ever since he's been in office.
What is the machine?
The machine, I really, like I said once before, I think that was...
Okay, Evan, listen. They wrapping it up here. I don't know if you're going to play some music until I get back. The studio, because it's a very good show I'm trying to push out. Now, stalling in and out.
Go back under to the present Mayor Daley's father, and the machine was pretty much an organization pretty much that could turn out votes, that could select.
I wish I was able to see it. I'll be there in 20 minutes, Stephanie. So keep the line open, and you can either play a track or try to work with it. See what goes on, because I don't know how we're going to be able to handle them. Don't know.
Elect his own candidates, and those candidates pretty much won with little opposition. That's what I think is the machine. But as I mentioned to you, I've only been in politics for a very short period of time. Most of what I've learned is what I've learned since I've been working in it and what I've read, you know, in college, as well as other books that I've read about it.
Reader can beat her. There was a feeder. Charlie Hayes Hill, Washington, successor. Charlie Rush can feel that. He should still be in office. I just forgot about that. Second half, too much dead air. Now, too much dead air. I mean, Lee, can you just grab the mic, Abner? Don't cry, man.
Let me show you what I want you to do. Let me show you what I want you to do. Come on.
Right, all right, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Underground Railroad Radio. As promised, our weekly guest, Professor Griff, is in the house once again. What's going on, Professor Griff? Is Zaza Ali here again, too?
Yeah, she's here.
Hello?
Yeah, she's here.
Okay. All right, so I got Professor Griff, got Sister Zaza Ali. Quite interesting show today, y'all. You know, every Wednesday with Professor Griff, we cipher through the news stories that's going on out there in the mainstream, and I give you this unique perspective from Professor Griff, one that you're not going to hear from our mainstream media or the television or in any newspaper. So today, Professor Griff, I'll talk a little bit about Al Sharpton. It's been on the front page of the paper, the TV, the internet, Facebook, I mean, everywhere you could think of. Everybody's right. Talking about Al being a rat, being an FBI informant. The people that broke it, well, I mean, this has been rumored. This, people's been talking about this for years now. He even mentioned it in a book in 1996 where he said he somewhat cooperated with federal authorities. He had a book, I think it was called Go and Tell Pharaoh.
Go Tell Pharaoh, yes.
Yeah. So this website, Smoking Gun, it's like a website where they just collect information through the Freedom of Information Act, and they put it on their website, and, you know, I guess, for you know, they let the people know all the stuff that they don't, you know, that they're not privy to on an everyday basis. So they come out with this information, a bunch of documents saying that he was informant, he was known as CI-7, and he is...
Right.
Yeah.
No, go on, I'm listening.
Okay. Yeah, he assisted the FBI and the NYPD in the 80s to take down the mob. You know, it goes on and on. I want to know, Professor Griff, well, first of all, what's your take on this? Is this like... Because it came out the blue. The first thing I want to know, they built this man image up. They gave him a show on MSNBC. He's running around with Obama, and then they just throw him under the bus with this one. So it's quite interesting, you know. What's your opinion on this? I'm going to let you just go off, brother.
Well, I try to give my opinion, but just based on the actual facts that are out there, I think we need to kind of take our time and kind of reassess the this whole Al Sharpton thing and just pick it up from the time that they called on him to speak out for Trayvon Martin and the Martins and Trayvon Martin's family. It seems like from that moment forward to today, I think he's been catapulted in a position to be in front of black people, to take that that position as the go-to black leader, so to speak, the hand-picked black leader by our open enemy. And we know we have to be careful of that, all right? So I think we need to also keep in mind the fact that this is not the COINTELPRO. This is not counterintelligence program of J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI, all right, which in that states, their purpose of this particular counterintelligence endeavor is to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, and or otherwise neutralize black nationalist hate-type organizations, groups, and their leadership, spokespersons, membership, and supporters. We need to keep in mind, that's not what this is. Al Sharpton wasn't on that job when he did what he did as far as wearing a wire. Now, I know a lot of people around the country, a lot of the young people around the country, and some of the so-called older young people want to ride the coattail of any leader that white people choose to put in front of us simply because they give them airtime. Right. We have to be very careful of that also. Some people have written the CI-7, which is a confidential informant, which is not something, a proud badge to wear. You understand what I'm saying? Some people have written him off as a poverty pimp. Anytime they need a loudmouth spokesman someplace, they call Al Sharpton. We have to be very careful of this ever since the Tawana Brawley days. All right? Sad, but true. He tried to jump on the Public Enemy bandwagon for getting rid of Professor Griff out of the group. I remember, you know, Al Sharpton calling me to the Slave Theater in Brooklyn with Alton Maddox.
Right.
And it was critical because it seems like any time, whether you want to or not, Al Sharpton seemed like he's always there to wave the banner for black people, for black people's causes. I guess there's nothing wrong with that if you're not wearing a wire for the government.
Right.
Are you following?
Right.
That's my opening statement. I'm going to let Zaza make her opening statement, then I'm going to come back to that. Hold on.
Okay.
Peace, brother. How you doing?
Peace, Zaza Ali. How you doing?
I am doing really well. You know, this is a really interesting topic. I always find it interesting how our people respond when these type of things kind of come to the forefront. It's like, you know, we champion black people now when white people go against them. It's like we jump on these bandwagons and go on these emotional orgasms without really stepping back and being logical in our thinking. I just, you know, went to Reverend Al Sharpton's website, nationalactionnetwork.net. And, you know, a lot of our people, especially unfortunately in the Christian community, I accuse them of consistent nothingness. And Al Sharpton falls under that category. And I just want to say this. I would have said this prior to this story dropping because I definitely think that there's something behind this story as far as the timing, why they're doing it now. Anybody that has any information on the feds and how they operate, once you become an informant for them, they own you. So it's not about just doing one drop on the mob and then somehow they let you go and you live the rest of your life, you know, riding off into the sunset. No, that's not how they operate. And that probably has something to do with him. Well, I'm not going to go into that, but I wanted to talk about his. Yeah, Griff's going to go into that. But his website, when I look through his blogs, and, you know, he puts out a blog every few days, so this is talking about the platform and what he represents. And you notice, I notice keywords like marching and organizing and a time for action and hope and change, these trigger words that are being used and thrown around now, but nothing's actually happening. So I'm looking through his website, and I see hating Obama is not a health care plan. Education reform without addressing the race gap is education deform. Paul Ryan doesn't represent America. While we celebrate the Oscars, we can't abort the fight to equality, and he's talking about gender equality and diversity. From Arizona to Uganda, we must protect the rights of the LGBT community. Now, on the first page of his website, he said that they did a poll, and 1 in 4 African Americans said that Al Sharpton speaks for them. What message, and I've gone through about 3 pages of his blogs that he's done recently, which one of these messages actually really truly speaks to the plight of black people today? This is what I call consistent nothingness. And we, on the Smoking Gun webpage, it says that the National Action Network is paying him $241,000 a year. This is a nonprofit agency. And what is it that he's really actually doing for the community outside of what about 20 other people are actually doing, which is having radio shows, doing talk shows, talking about the same thing that they're talking about on CNN and MSNBC, these same hot topics, but nothing is really getting accomplished in our communities. So while the whole, you know, FBI snitching mob thing, yeah, that's important. But to me, it's like you don't have to be an informant you don't have to be an informant or a snitch for the government to be an agent for the government. So you can divert the people's attention by being an agent and keeping them focused on everything but the things that they should actually be focused on, i.e. marching,
right.
Donating for certain causes, and nothing ever actually comes out of that. You know, jumping on the hot topics like Trayvon Martin and ignoring the other 1,000 Trayvon Martins that are actually happening around the country. And they know that we are an emotional people, so they tap into these emotional orgasms, which is what I call them, that consistently happen and don't really go to the root of the problem, like Stand Your Ground. Let's fight Stand Your Ground, not the mindset that actually created Stand Your Ground in the first place. So I'm going to turn you back over to Griff.
Okay, so I think she laid out a few things, you know, in her opening statement that I think we really need to stop and take a critical look at, simply because we need to understand, A, what is the smoking gun's intention? Let's take the weight back
right.
off Al for a second.
Right, right.
Let's get attention off of Al. What are these devils' intentions? As I just asked, why are they bringing the story out now?
Mm-hmm.
When you admitted that Al put out his book, Go Tell Pharaoh, on pages 137 through 139, he actually mentions it, that he wore the wire. And then deeper than that, I'm reading an article here from hip-hop mogul James Jimmy Hinchman, Rosemont, sentenced to life in prison. What does that have to do with Al Sharpton? It goes into the whole Al Sharpton piece where it talks about, it says, one-time suspect behind the murder of Tupac, has worked with the likes of actor Michael K. Williams, Sean Combs, Puffy, and Reverend Al Sharpton. Why the hell Hinchman work with Al Sharpton? You go back to Al Sharpton's book, Go Tell It on Pharaoh, between pages 137 and 139. It not only talks about him being an FBI informant and wearing a wire, but he was the main one, according to Ludacris' manager, Shaka Zulu's father, who said that he was the one who set up a shot of Shakur.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that, yeah.
So if you go read the FBI's War on Tupac Shakur and Black Leadership by John Patash, it goes into that using FBI files. The same FBI files that you and I can't get a hold of, but yet the smoking gun can get them, and a good white friend of mine, John Patash, can get them in his book, FBI's War on Tupac Shakur and Black Leadership. So there's a reason why they're releasing this particular story right now as we speak. And the timing could not be better, because he's parading around the country with Barack Obama, showing up to parties with $200,000 plate dinners. You understand what I'm saying? And this is very
right.
critical. And we need to understand why they're propping him up. So let's be really real about this. You know, the New York Post, I believe it says, he says, I'm not a rat, I'm a cat. And then when you read the article, it says, yeah, you're a cat, you're a pussy. So we have to. So let's just pause for a second. Roll the tape back. If Al was moving weight, right, he was doing what the hell he had to do. If you got busted, dude, then you eat that. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
You eat that, man. Don't blame that on nobody else. But I'm surprised when I'm reading through this information. Why? How did the mob let him get away with that? The Genovese family, how they let him get away with that?
Good question.
That speaks volumes, man. That speaks volumes. Who are you really working for, Al? You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
And who are they protecting, Al? To the point where, like Zaza said, once they get you and get their hooks in you, they don't just use you for one assignment. They sent Al to befriend and hang around the dude, hell, the boxing promoter, Don King, try to get Don King on tape. So they was using Al for a few different things. Yo, man, once you come, they little bitch, you they little bitch. Plain and simple. And they'll use you till they can't use you no more.
Now, Griff, we hear this term, black leaders, quote-unquote black leaders, you know, and people often say, you know, once you see these people get a certain amount of media exposure, they're already sold out, because for the mere fact that they got a certain amount of media exposure says that there's a hidden agenda going on.
I've been hearing for years. We've heard about Al setting up Asada Shakur. There's been rumors that Farrakhan had something to do with the death of Malcolm X. There was rumors that Jesse Jackson had his hands involved with the death of Dr. Martin Luther King. Is it safe to say that once we see these brothers or sisters, whoever it may be, getting a certain amount of exposure, that they are somewhat working with the system in a way in which is in an informant type way, in a COINTELPRO type way, or you get what I'm trying to say?
I understand exactly what you're saying. I'm trying to make the connection with media exposure, though. You understand what I'm saying? Just because you get media exposure, that doesn't necessarily mean you're doing something positive.
Well, people equate media exposure with them promoting you or them trying to push. Like, the only reason we know about Farrakhan or Al or Jesse is because they was pushed on us relentlessly. Like Sister Zaza Ali said, Al's doing what millions of people are doing all over the place, talking about issues on radio, on, you know, all types of different outlets. But there's certain individuals, or another brother would be Charles Barron, that you see get the spotlight or get the shine on Channel 7, on Channel 9, Channel 11, on MSNBC, on CNN. So is it safe to assume that these people that get this spotlight shine on them, although they appear to be for us, there's really a hidden agenda going on?
I'm not sure if that's accurate, bro. To be honest with you, simply because the media, they use the media to destroy individuals.
Right.
Unless you're in cahoots with them, you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or you're in the brotherhood, or you've taken the oath. But a lot of times when you get that much exposure, they're setting you up to destroy you or to humiliate you.
Right.
It's just that they couldn't do it with Farrakhan. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
I haven't seen Mr. Farrakhan on TV lately, have you?
No.
No, I haven't. I don't think you're getting that much play like people think he is. And when you did see him on TV, they was trying to destroy Mr. Farrakhan. It's just that they weren't smart enough.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the whole idea of Al Sharpton, who was selected by them and put in front of us, you understand what I'm saying? But you have to keep in mind with the Trayvon Martin thing, it was the black press that broke those stories, man. It was the black press that broke a lot of these stories around the country dealing with young black men being murdered and their body parts missing. It was the Dick Gregory's that's on the front line that broke these stories. All right? Now, when Al Sharpton rides in on the white horse to be the loudmouth spokesman, that's a whole different story. And Al, when he shows up, he is the one, man, who calls the press to let them know that he's going to be there. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
These same black leaders that you talk about, how many times do the press speak positively about these people? That's what we really need to look at. And who made these people leaders? All right? So we need to ask these some critical questions. All right? When we're asking those type of questions. So when you say black leaders, I don't know, man. I've seen Jesse Jackson in front of in the media for a minute. But hold on, Zaza, I want to speak to that.
Okay.
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, there's a difference between having a spotlight and them putting the spotlight on a particular individual in order to spread confusion or to destroy that person's character, i.e. Minister Farrakhan, Khalid Muhammad, Malik Zulu Shakur, Shabazz, in certain regards, but... there's a difference between that spotlight and giving them an actual platform to voice their perspective. And you look at people like Al Sharpton, he's only going to touch certain topics. He's not going to cover the nitty-gritty topics that really need to be discussed when you talk about racism and white supremacy. In his book, The Psychological Covert War on Hip-Hop, Griff talks about the names and types of disinformation agents. And one of them is an agent of influence. It says these agents can be unwitting, undermine control, or ideologically motivated to use their positions of influence to sway the minds of others. Examples of agents of influence are anchormen on TV, journalists, labor leaders, TV commentators, academics quoted by the media, and some politicians. He also says confusion agents, an agent whose job is to produce confusion by disseminating confounding information, and then provocation agent, an agent sent in to provoke and destabilize the target group to do foolish things. Now, these black leaders, most of them who are in the forefront, who are talking heads on MSNBC and CNN and whatnot, all of them can pretty much fall underneath these categories. So you give a person like Al Sharpton the spotlight and let him voice his opinion on certain topics that aren't hot-button topics, but just to keep the people going just enough to make them think that you actually care when they really don't give a damn about our people.
Right.
Right. Now, hello?
Yes,
no,
sir.
No, go on.
Yeah. Now, we've used this term a lot during this conversation, black leadership. In the past, I've heard people say that they don't like that term when it comes with black people, because why is it that we're the only one that needs a leader? There's no great Hispanic leader or Asian leader or white leader. Why do we always need a leader appointed to lead our people? Do you see anything wrong with that term, black leader? Because most people often ask, who's going to be the next black leader? Is there something wrong with that term, do you think?
I think there's something very historically wrong with that and wrong with the thinking of why people think that we don't need a leader. No other people have went through what black people have went through. And we normally have the head of the village in Africa. We normally have that individual that we go through. Not that he's the leader, but if you go among the Dogon people, you know, it's that brother, that brother that sits at the head of the village. Do you understand what I'm saying? He would be considered the same thing as Denzel Washington was in the movie The Book of Eli. He has all the information in a human, not written down. So in order for you to go and to learn, you had to sit at his feet. So in keeping with African tradition, if you want to look at the fact that we did have a head, but nonetheless, the whole village, everyone in the village had their individual parts to play. So in most cases nowadays, we supposed to have been growing beyond having a so-called leader, but we can only do that if the people learn how to lead themselves. Hold on.
And I would add to that, you know, this goes right into hand-in-hand with what I just talked about agents of influence. These people have been studying our people for a long time, and they know that the masses of our people are actually asleep, and there's a lot of us out here that are hungry and thirsty for knowledge and for information and some sort of spark and some sort of understanding for the culture and climate dealing with black America. That's why they put an Al Sharpton on TV and give him 30 minutes every day so you can have someone to look to, that bright light, even for that short amount of time, thinking that this person actually has your best interest at hand. And that's not to say that he doesn't, that he's not doing good things for black people, but these are pacifying you know, methods that they use to keep our people from really tapping into the self. So that's why terms, you know, black leadership and putting one person at the forefront or making it look like this person actually has some power, in a way it lends to our people staying asleep, because all of us have the power within us to actually be leaders. And the greatest leaders, i.e. Elijah Muhammad, create great leaders. So what we need to do is, you know, we have a savior complex, and a lot of that ties back to Christianity and black people's love for white Jesus, and we're sitting back and waiting for somebody else to do what we actually could be doing. That's why they keep Al Sharptons and certain talking heads at the forefront for us to look to make it seem like somebody's actually making progress, i.e. Barack Obama, and Griff will be the first one to tell you that black people are so starstruck as if he's the second coming of Christ, that a lot of our people have actually gone to sleep. A lot of our so-called black leaders and politicians have gone to sleep just because of the fact that he's made it to the White House. So, yes, we have a savior complex, and we need to kind of come off of that black leader, one person, and start cultivating an environment where we create leaders, because, you know, we had councils of elders. We come from a people that had a council of elders where you were coming to, you know, master teachers who studied for 40 and 42 years in order to get to the point where they could even give you some advice. Now we got these flunkies going and getting master's and bachelor's degrees and PhDs, and now they think they're in a position to tell our people something when they really don't even have the love in their hearts.
What type of effect do you think this has on the black community at large when a quote-unquote black leader such as Al Sharpton is thrown under the bus? Do you think it's demoralizing to those that look up to him as a leader? And do you think that it sort of makes a person give up on the, if you would call it the struggle, or give up on trying?
Well, my thing is, if your open enemy made the leader that you're following, right, then they can destroy the leader that you're following.
Right.
They know exactly what they're doing. It's an agenda. So I was just reading some things to me on a Facebook page in reference to some of the things, the outlandish things that people were saying about Al Sharpton, because some strange reason, they ain't went to one goddamn meeting, National Action Network. All of a sudden, now Al Sharpton is the leader. How did Al Sharpton end up being a leader? So who appointed him the leader? The leader of what? And then where is he leading us to? These are some of the questions that we have to answer. Where's the black economic program? You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Where's the blueprint for the factories, the hospitals, the airport? All right, where's the land? So when you talk about black leader, you can't compare him to black leaders or a black leader like the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad or Marcus Garvey. Are you following me?
Yeah.
See, because Marcus Garvey, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, was chosen and by the people and not the enemy.
Right, right.
Of the people. And we have to understand it when we throw this term around. And we have to be very, very, very careful as to not fall into this trap that white people have set and laid for us. And we seem like we fall into it, you know, just hook, line, and sinker, the blind leading the blind. Yes, hold on for a second.
Well, I was going to say, like, this sister came on my page and said, I've never seen anyone on the front lines for black people like Al Sharpton. I'm like, what?
Well, you know, a lot of people feel that way, actually. A lot of people do feel that way.
But you know why? Because they watch TV.
Right,
because
exactly.
Because TV is their mentor, their guide, is their be-all. That's all they know, what they actually see on television. And the ones who are really speaking truth to power are not going to be on TV.
Right.
So, you know, the idea of – when is the last time Al Sharpton bought cameras to the hood? When is the last time he went up in a prison and brought cameras in there and really talked about the plight of our men and our women and what they're dealing with in the prison industrial complex? So to answer your question, yes, I think it can be demoralizing that people who are constantly sitting around looking at TV and thinking that, okay, we got one bright light up there. As long as he's up there, I feel good about myself. Then when they snatch him down, now you're feeling demoralized because instead of you focusing on being a leader or building a leader, you're sitting back and letting white people appoint leaders for you.
Right.
And that's the real problem. And what I want to say just as far as the whole, you know, being an informant and we can't judge him, and, you know, I've heard people say, oh, it was the mob. It doesn't matter. It was the mob. It's like when you speak to truth to power, all of us are going to get to the point where we're in the valley of decision. So they can come at you for speaking truth to power, which they do, which all of our black leaders have done that, or they can come at you when they want to. You sign that paper, and now they come at you and use you whenever they want to. And look at what the repercussion of this is in his life right now. If for the everyday average brother and sister on the street, he has no credibility anymore, mob or not.
Yeah.
And those are the people who he should really be fighting for.
Let me say something. Your brother Rich, he's only the leader, like Zaza said, as long as you're tuning in to these bobbleheads, man, these alphabet boys, CNNs, MSNBC, NBCs, and the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way. We don't make leaders on TV, bruh.
Right.
Our leaders are made in the street. Am I right or wrong?
You're right.
And we have to to be very real about this.
Now,
No, go on.
No, I was just going to say, what do you think? What is it going to take for us to get rid of this Messiah complex? What is it going to take for us to see and to ignite the leader in ourselves? What's some of the things you think we can start doing as a people? For those out there listening who might be shocked to hear you say that Al's a handpicked leader or that, you know, whatever. What is it going to take for us to go in that leader inside us, do you think, Professor Griff and Sister Zaza Ali?
I think I'm going to say a few. I'll give you a few, and I'll just turn it over to Zaza. I think, number one, we have to be able to recognize the God in the self. That's number one. As long as you're looking for a God outside the self to solve those issues that deal with the self, you will always have that complex, looking outside of yourself to solve your own issues. You understand what I'm saying? When
yes.
I pull from within to solve my own issues. You following me? So even if they do appoint someone to put in front of us, and regardless of what title and paycheck they give them, and they can call them whatever they want to call them, all right? If his agenda don't match up with my agenda, all right, he ain't leading me no place. I never, ever bought in to these people leading me, the Al Sharptons, Jesse Jacksons, or none of them. All of them are on the payroll. So number one, back to the old age antage of knowledge of self, know thyself.
Know thyself.
That's number one. All right, if we could start there, I'm going to pass it over to Zaza, and then I'll take it back from her.
Yeah, I agree totally with everything that he just said, and I would add to that, stay away from anyone who leads you away from yourself. That
right.
includes the church, that includes the mosque, that includes the Buddhist temples, that
right.
includes the masjid,
right.
that includes the, you know, whatever organization you are part of, anybody that's trying to take away the greatness or that light. You know, I've been around so many people coming up in my life. I had so many ideas and had revolutionary thoughts and ideas coming up as a young woman of things that I was going to do for my people. And our people was the ones among every step of the way that always tried to discourage me. And that was in every different, in a lot of different circles. So the first thing is to stay away from anybody who leads you away from yourself. The second thing is that for each and every one of us, you, Griff, me, to be our best and our brightest and be as excellent as we can everywhere we step foot on this planet. I've been with this brother doing lectures and watching him speak to a room full of people, and I can see a light in their eyes when he stops speaking. He touches and taps into something within our people. And I'm pretty sure with your radio show that you're doing the same, and that's our goal every day when we're on the radio, for each and every one of us to be our best and our brightest. You can't tell me when you see a beautiful black man or a beautiful black woman step into the room sharp, looking good, speaking right, speaking, you know, well, very well articulated, intelligent, handsome, clean, well-groomed, beautiful, all of those different things, it changes the vibe and the momentum in the room, and our children need to see that. And that's why Malcolm X was so important and all the different leaders that came up, just the way that confidence that they exuded. So each and every one of us just needs to focus on being our greatest and our best self. And that alone in itself, just that visual, and then to be able to be a part of that, like people being able to be a part of Griff, to watch him on YouTube and sit back for 5 and 6 hours and study what it is that he does, it matters. It matters a lot.
Gotcha.
And Brother Rich, I think the next thing is you have to be the very embodiment of what you teach. I think you and I and Zaza went over this.
Yeah, we touched on that. Yeah. Yeah, we touched on that.
You can't say and talk it, man, and not be about it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. We actually touched on that when we were dealing with the whole Jay-Z 5% thing, and you see it done blown up in the media now.
we
had that show about 2-3 weeks ago, so
right.
It's kind of interesting, you know.
Right, Zaza said, you set it off, see?
Oh, man.
So there's a quote from James Baldwin. He says, not everything that is faced can be changed. But nothing can be changed until you face it.
Say that one more time, Professor Griff. One more time.
Nothing pardon me, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced.
Mm.
And that is very real, and but let's deal with that from an esoteric point of view. We're not talking about things that we are faced with in life. We're talking about facing the weakness of self. Because if you don't think yourself to be a leader, you won't be a leader. And we ain't talking about you leading a few people that may follow you because you got a certain degree of knowledge on a certain teaching. We're talking about you leading yourself to the great to the greatness that you are. You understand what I'm saying? Maximizing your potential.
Right.
So we have to be able to face the weakness of self to pull the best out of the self. I know we don't want to get deep into the metaphysical esoteric thing, but that's just something I had to drop on you so we can understand it from a deeper part of the self and pull on that for understanding. Because a lot of times we just think, okay, well, sounds good. It's a nice quote, but what does it actually mean? You understand what I'm saying? We're not going to be faced with everything. It's just not everything that can be changed. We're not trying to change everything. I can only change that which I'm faced with. If I'm not faced with it, then the effectiveness of Professor Griff, can I not change it? If I'm not faced with it, how about if Brother Rich is faced with it? And I give you the knowledge, and you change it, right or wrong.
Right.
But then the quote says, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. And that turns it back on the self. You have to face it, man. Plain and simple. And this is what we've been speaking about, you know, this few minutes that we've been speaking on the phone. Dude, if you're moving weight, you got to eat it. You face it, dude. You understand what I'm saying? If you water wire, then you face that, man. Now, if you want to change that particular dynamic, you may thought you have changed it by putting it in your book. That's fine, whatever, whatever, whatever. But now you got to go deal with them crackers, man, that's trying to expose you once again. Let me tell you something, man. They ain't never letting that dude go. He's going to have to live with that and ride with that one the rest of his life. Hold on for a second.
I think you answered the question. You summed it up. Did you? What can I add to that?
Yeah, he pretty much answered that one, nailed that one right there.
Mm-hmm. Let me just say one last thing. Yo, this last quote, Rich. It says, wolves do not lose sleep over the opinions of sheep, man.
Now, say
wolves
that one.
Wolves don't lose sleep over the opinions of sheep.
Yeah.
These wolves don't care nothing about weak sheep because they know the sheep are too weak to change the reality of a wolf existence. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They ain't worried about no damn sheep like Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton is a useless eater, man. When it comes to politics, let me tell you something. Fascism, which America promotes, disguised as democracy, needs a black face to it. And we have to be very real about this, man. It needs Barack Obama, all right, in order to thrive. Because young whites have came up on Farrakhan, Nation of Islam, 5% Nation of Gods and Earths, Public Enemy, rap music, hip-hop. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
These crackers are slick, man. They know exactly what they're doing. They know the majority of their young people listen to hip-hop. What better way to hook Jay-Z up with Barack Obama, and Barack Obama's now in the White House? Because he gives off his vibe like he's fly and he's down with hip-hop. So Ludacris writes the song, Will I Am, and the rest of these people surround Barack Obama, and he's flying, he's cool, and he's hip, and absolutely doing nothing, coming up with zero, shooting fucking blanks. And this is very real, man, but we're not going to talk your head off, man.
Well, I definitely appreciate this segment again. This weekly segment is turning out to be a huge success. The people definitely loving y'all. I want y'all to give your contact information again for the new listeners that's tuning in or watching on YouTube about how they may listen to your blog talk show, because y'all on the radio every day as well. Or, you know, if you got an email or phone number, just give it to the people so they can contact y'all.
All right, this is Professor Griffin. The people know that they can reach me at 678-557-2901. 1-9, and we're on the air every Tuesday at 8 p.m. on Enemy Minds Radio. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/MindsMatter. The name of the show is Enemy Minds. It's every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. And if people just want to hit me up on Facebook, it's X-Minister Prof. Griff. That's X-M-I-N-I-S-T-A Prof. Griff. Hold on.
You can hit me up on Facebook as Zaza Ali. We also have an Enemy Minds Radio Facebook page, N-M-E-N-I-N, Enemy Minds Radio. Just hit me up on Facebook, Zaza Ali, hit Griff up. Yeah, and make sure you tune in on Tuesday nights.
All right, Mr. Rich, we really appreciate you, man.
Definitely, definitely. This is Brother Rich, Underground Railroad, signing out. Professor Griff, Sister Zaza Ali, we'll see y'all next week. Peace.
Peace.
Peace.